a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 275. Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, this, there's been so much drama behind this episode. Not like good drama, like interesting drama. Just like, so I was going to interview John Sehorn. These are all people you will hear interviewed. I was going to interview John Sehorn, who's a professor here at the Augustine Institute, about a bunch of interesting New Testament stuff and all kinds of interesting. He's a really interesting guy. And at the last minute, he had to bail. So I got Jared Stout, another professor I'm friends with, who's another really interesting guy, and tried to get him to come on, and he said yes, and it was all good and wonderful. And then he bailed. So at the last minute, he was stuck downtown or something along those lines. So so at the last minute, it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm doing a solo show. So here we are doing a show. I got some fun stuff on tap, but I got some stuff on tap that I think is going to get either A, interrupted, or B, invited into, because I am right at the end of this show. I have this new integral ecology reading group that I'm a part of is meeting, and we've read some Wendell Berry and some people that you've heard. If you listen to the show, Zach, the space plumber, and Adam Beach, the guy that almost got himself shot by Wendell Berry, are both coming over, and some other really interesting human beings. And so Andrew Beach is a little brother. So what I did was I set the gear up for interview, but no one's here. So as people come by, I'm going to like snag them and make them come on the show. So this is going to be kind of a, we never know where this show is going to go. I may get all the way through it and nobody come around in time. I'm thinking people are going to show up early for this group at 3 o'clock, and there's all these interesting people. So this is going to be very counter position in the sense of I am literally in a coffee house as we speak, and the interesting souls that happen to stop by the coffee house to do interesting things are going to be around. And I'm going to grab some of them if I can. If not, I'll just keep talking and do a show. I've got some pretty fun stuff on tap too. So let's get the chattiness out of the way here. So, man, two nights ago, I had this brutal insomnia. I just have some stuff on my mind, and I was going through some stuff and just kind of trying to figure some stuff out. And I just didn't sleep to speak of all night. And I had to work like a 9-10 hour shift the next day. And I tell you what, there's just like, you know, some tribes and places, you know, different people across history. And even now at some cultures, they have kind of a tradition of sometimes kind of like we do, people do fasting. They'll fast and pray, but also maybe like not sleep, you know, sleep deprivation to kind of create an alternate reality in some way, or some alternate experience of reality would be a proper way of, you know, to alter your perception, you know, and how you view things and how you experience things. And it's just interesting. Going through the normal life, the normal customers, the normal engagement that you would normally do, except you just haven't slept in a really long time, is a really interesting thing to do. So I don't know. I like sleep way too much. I don't see myself jumping on that bandwagon anytime soon. But I went, got a good night's sleep last night. I did the, I've talked about this on the show when I did the sleep episode. There's an entire episode of the Over the Counter podcast with me and Mark Gieschek about this. By the way, Mark is sitting a few feet from me on the other side of a bookshelf, and he might be the first person. He's in some kind of a meeting with some friend, and I am hoping to snag him. We might have an impromptu segment of Over the Counter here on The Counter Position if I can get Mark's attention before he leaves. but we talked about so biphasic sleep, how some people up until the Industrial Revolution, it was just common. Everyone makes reference to it in literature, from Homer and the scripture up to like 1800s medical texts. They talk about the first sleep and the second sleep. Everybody on earth went to sleep roughly about an hour after dusk, woke up for an hour or two in the middle of the night, and then went back to sleep and slept till right about dawn. That was just the norm. That's just how it works. That is evidently how our species sleeps. You know, strange. But I did that exactly. I went to bed at about 7:30 last night because I was just dead from not sleeping. And I woke up at 2 and I was awake almost exactly from 2 to 4. And then I slept from 4 till about 8 o'clock and then woke up. So there was I experienced a biphasic sleep, almost textbook. It was shifted. The first shift was like 6.5 hours because I was so tired. I just went down. But that's kind of fun. I was kind of mad that I woke up and then I saw what time it was. And then about as I was starting to realize I was going to go back to sleep about 4, I was kind of getting tired. I was like, wait a minute. I got all excited. I think I would have gone to sleep at 3:30 if I hadn't realized that I was doing biphasic sleep. And that kind of got me excited and probably kept me awake for a little longer. So, all right, hold on. Coffee sip break. Oh, man. Shout out to Commonwealth Coffee, New Honduran. So good. I don't even know what the name of it is. It just came in. One of my baristas made me a cup of it. I haven't read the bag yet. I don't even know what it's called. But Commonwealth Coffee, beautiful coffee. So there you go. So I was trolling Michael Miley. Shout out to Michael Miley, drummer for the band Rival Sons. I was trolling Michael by text. He texted me and I was texting him back and I asked him where he was. And he said he was in Liverpool and they were playing Leeds the next night. And I'm like, so I'm basically doing the joke from, a version of the joke from Dumb and Dumber. I'm like, so I text him back and I'm like, man, I've always wanted to go to Australia. And I just kept like, and he goes, no, I'm in the UK. And then I texted him back and I was like, wait a minute, the UK is in Australia now? Oh yeah, Brexit. I heard about that. You know, and he figured out pretty quickly that I was drilling him, but I guess I just told you that story to let you know what you probably already know is I really love messing with people. It's just kind of it's fun. It's fun. Turning to politics and news and whatnot, which I am only going to do for the remainder of this segment, and then I am not going to talk about it unless one of my guests brings it up. I have interesting things to talk about. But we're starting to get a feel for how Trump works. He floats something, sees if it works, and he dives on it. If there's backlash, then he finds a way to do it in a different way. You know, so torture, we're going to revive waterboarding. We have to fight fire with fire, he says. And then everyone kind of was like, dude, that is sketchy. Even Republicans are like, no, we're not down for that. And he's like, well, I mean, you know, his Secretary of Defense, Mattis, is against it. He goes, well, I'm going to defer to my guy on this. I mean, he's the expert. This other one was like, yeah, now he did the executive order. They're going to build this wall, right? We're going to build a wall. We're going to make Mexico pay for it, right? And then he floats this possibility of a 20% import tax on all things from Mexico, which I'm not super stoked on because I eat a lot of delicious things that used to be in Mexico. And, but it's just funny because then it's like, the president of Mexico is supposed to come and he cancels. And then Trump floats this thing about possible import tax on things from Mexico to pay for the wall. But then someone points out, yeah, and then they're going to pass that along. So the taxpayers are going to pay for the wall, and then the taxpayers are going to pay the taxpayers back by paying again because they're going to pass on this 20%. So he's going to use my tax money to build this wall and then pay for it by taxing my beans or my avocados. Great. Thank you, Mr. Trump. Didn't seem like it worked, but skipping over that. So I heard something I never thought I would hear. And you can track this back to Trump. So I'm going to give props where props are due. He ambushed a guy. I was from CBS, maybe from NBC. One of the big mainstream. He gave his first big interview and he's walking around and he just made the dude speechless by the guy was asking him if he could hear the shouts and the chants and everything from the women's march. And he goes, yeah, you know, there's another march coming up, the March for Life. Like every year, this anti-abortion march, every year they fill the city with like hundreds of thousands of people. And you guys never mention it. And the guy was like caught speechless for a second. You can see he was trying to recalculate and he tried to go someplace else. And Trump took a, you know, another place. And I thought, well, haha, you know, he got one guy. So a while ago, I'm listening to NPR. And they straight up did a story on the March for Life this weekend. And I'm like, what? It hasn't even happened. So I'm interested to watch what the coverage is going to look like. You know, I guess Mike Pence spoke. I guess you can't ignore the vice president doing a public speech. So the March for Life is getting at least... I heard one story of mainstream coverage, so I'm sure by the next time you hear from me, there will have been all kinds of talk about the lack or for the first time coverage of the thing. It's probably happening right now. I've just been too busy running around. And the good news is I'm excited. Bought the new car. Doesn't have a USB connector in it. It's kind of plain Jane. I was digging around in the little like console. I found a little like connector. Turns out there is an auxiliary and it works. I bought a cord for the auxiliary to lightning for my 7 and I can use my phone to play music and podcasts and stuff in the car. So I can listen to Breadbox Media in the car through the system. So I'm excited. Speaking of Breadbox Media, go to breadboxmedia.com or the iTunes App Store. Get the app, change the world. You can listen to the feed live. You can access podcast, and of course you can always subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and I think Google Play. Alright, so let's go to the break and we'll be back in just a second. You're listening to The Counterposition.
I'm a sacred word to mutter, ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, well, you got another segment of me so far. It looks like nobody interesting has tried to get up and come in here. So I thought it's only two. It's not time for the reading group yet, though. And Mark hasn't got done with his meeting yet. So I'm looking for a lot of times if I'm doing the show from the conference room here in the coffee house, it's got big glass walls. People come in, they'll kind of wave and kind of joke. And so if anyone shows up, I'm going to wave them in. Sarah the Quitter Stacy almost ended up on the show. Shout out to Sarah the Quitter Stacy. She's actually right on the other side of the bookshelf here too. But she's helping the lovely and talented Sarah Catania learn how to do the library. So I didn't want to interrupt her. But if she gets done in time, Sarah the Quitter Stacy. I know famous, right? You've heard a lot about Sarah. We may get her for a few minutes here on the show. I'm going to feel bad if I sit here the whole time teasing all the possible people that could be on the show. And then you sit and listen to me the whole time. Just get ready. That may happen. But I have set us up. We're fishing. This is basically fishing. I've got the extra mic set up for a guest. It's right by the door. So we have our bait. We have our bait in the water and we're just waiting. You know, we're just waiting. And this is kind of an active waiting. You know, this is like bass fishing or something. You know, I never was into like bass fishing or river fishing, anything when I was a kid where you're constantly recasting. And, you know, when I was a kid and I used to go fishing, it's all about catfishing. Southern Missourians love to catfish. Why? Here's what catfishing looked like when I was a kid. And this is like in high school, right? So we're like in Boy Scouts and stuff. We go down to the lake. There's this lake down south of Fredericktown where the Scout Ranch. We would sneak beer in. We build a fire on the pump at the dam. We get on the dam. There's a big old pump. We build a fire up on the pump. And then you would basically like get a couple of fishing poles, get a treble hook, put some chicken liver on it, get this little bobber thing with a little bell or something, throw it and let it sink all the way down to the bottom because it's like really, really deep there and there's like big catfish down there. And you prop it in this little thing with some rocks and you sit there and you drink beer, tell lies. That's all you do. So basically, I like fishing that is drinking beer and telling lies next to a fire, punctuated by the occasional, oh, crap, and you run down and get a catfish. That's fishing right there. More drinking and lie telling than there's actually reeling or casting. That one was for free. That was not in any way on the outline. All right. So, I went to, I kept breakfast this morning with, the lovely and talented, Chris Stefanik, reallifecatholic.com. And Chris and I have been like canceling on each other back and forth, trying to get some time together. Here's two dudes that just love each other deeply. He's dramatically more famous than I am. We're both kind of playing in the Catholic world, trying to do something interesting and different. And we love spending time together. I love every minute I get with Chris, and we're just both so stupid busy that it's like impossible. But we managed to carve out a couple of hours this morning, go to a breakfast buffet at this little, this hotel right near the institute where my day job is. And it's fun. Hung out, had some good conversation. And so we had a really interesting conversation this morning. And I want to relay a little bit of and talk about some issues that came up. So he had gone up to visit. There's this guy from here in Denver. I can't remember the guy's name. Kyle, I think. He sold a company, an Internet of Things company to Amazon. And, you know, we ended up moving up there to run it for a couple years as part of the deal so he can get his payout and stuff. And I mean, he's going to do well, you know. And his Catholic guy just built this beautiful tech company, sold it off, you know. So he's working for Amazon now for doing his thing and stuff. And as Chris went up and visited him because he was speaking up there. And so Chris just experienced virtual reality, VR, for the first time. And I've never done it. I really want to do it. I think I want to do it on the air. I think I'm going to try to make that a show where we're going to do a show about virtual reality and you're going to get to hear me experience virtual reality for the first time. So I got to figure out how that works and who to make it happen. But he has some so I guess he was showing Chris like some new like cutting edge cool stuff that he's working on or something. And he said it was like, so this is Chris's first taste of virtual reality. I've never tasted it. But he was telling me that it was like you're in a room. And you're just like in a room. I guess he was like shooting zombies or something. It was a video game. A couple of them he played with. But you're just in a room and it's like you can hear the sound coming from all directions the way it normally would be. When you shoot, the gun in your hand moves the way like a gun moves when it's shooting. And he said the guy that was in the actual room with him was talking to him. And it would like freak him out and scare him because, you know, he would kind of like catch him by surprise. Like, oh, you're still here? Like, because, I mean, he had just become totally immersed. I mean, evidently this VR stuff is just absolutely real. And we were just talking about like, as this gets better and better and better and better, you know, not to mention, you know, what can be done with this. There's cool, amazing stuff that can be done with it, but it's always a double-edged sword, right? The porn industry has already dove on this in a big way. In fact, they were some of the leaders in VR. There's a dirty little secret to the internet, in case you didn't know. A whole bunch of the tools that you probably use every day, especially tools for connection, for video conferencing or whatever, all stuff, all those early versions of those tools that showed it was possible, that kind of created proof of concept, came from the porn world. They're the ones that put all the money on the front end of all of those tech. And not to mention like, you know, 3/4 of the internet is pornography, but the money behind a lot of the technology that you probably use, you know, probably like Google Hangout or something. It's like, there's like a lot of this stuff that, you know, there's some company, they set up a shell company, they dump some money in it, they figure it out. Once they use it, they give themselves a right, then they sell that off or whatever. There's a, you know, so in some ways it doesn't matter that that's who it is, because it's kind of like they want this tech, and so they build a tech company. But anyway, the porn world is dove on the VR thing. So there's going to be all kinds of sketchiness. There always is. That's just the nature of things. It's just getting more effective and more weird. But I'm not so much, I mean, I am worried about that. And I remember I was talking about Dennis. I keep blanking the guy's name all day. Not Dennis Leary, not Dennis Quaid. Dennis, stand-up comedian, was on Saturday Night Live, political commentary, turned very conservative, you know, longish black hair. Can't remember his name. It's driving me nuts, tip of my tongue. Does a lot of metaphor sub-referencing and stuff. Anyway, he was just talking. I remember him doing a bit about virtual reality when it first being talked about like a long time ago, like back in the 90s. And he was like, he said something along the lines of like, you know, when a factory worker or a dock worker can come home and sit in his recliner with a beer and have all kinds of fun with Claudia Schiffer, it's going to make cocaine look like a Tic Tac. And I mean, it's the addictive nature of this virtual reality is, I can imagine it's going to get off the chain because it's so real. You can really, really lose yourself in it. And so what we were talking about as a long intro to what we were talking about. We talked about that too, but we were talking about like, I have two different versions of this. I have two different, in my mind, I have two different ideas. So phones are distracting us all the time. You know, we're in a community, but we're not in the community that's around us. We're like, we're sitting around a bunch of people ignoring them while we comment on someone we would rather be with their Facebook photos or like texting with people that aren't there physically, you know? So we're already kind of living in a virtual reality, in a virtual community that isn't kind of attached to our physical whereabouts. You know, and it's all the different things, screens and stuff and all the, you know, the documenting everything, you know, I keep throwing that line out from that Ramirez song about it's hard to have a holy moment when you're trying to take it home. Or he says, I don't play to people anymore. I play to their phones. It's hard to have a holy moment when you're trying to take it home. You know, so this technology versus being present. And so we were talking about, I think that there's two different ways this can go. I think there's either going to be like a wholesale adoption and a paradigm shift. And just we're just going to have to, we as tool makers, as evangelizers, as people that want to create connections in culture, whatever, we're just going to have to embrace it. If that happens, we're going to have to embrace it. Versus the other side would be, I tend to think that there's going to be a big segment of society where there's going to be a backlash. You know, you look at like Werner Herzog doesn't have a computer, doesn't have a Wi-Fi connection in his house, doesn't have an email address. We're about to do a seminar here in after the show on feminism, the body and the machine by Wendell Berry, where Wendell Berry did an essay for Harper's and they reprinted Harper's about why he's not going to buy a computer. So there's a backlash, you know. I think that there's going to be a backlash. There was an article that came out about a ton of coffee houses in New York have followed Cafe Grumpy and have killed the Wi-Fi connection. And some of them have straight up banned laptops and phones from being out in the shop. And the businesses are doing better, not worse. So there's a segment of people craving being present. They're craving the encounter of other human beings in a real, organic, actual way. And so, I don't know. I think there could be a backlash. Now, I think that's going to be the thing, man. This is going to be, they're going to keep going so far that the circle is going to come around full circle. And we're going to get past virtual reality. And the only thing that's going to be even more interesting is going to be reality. That's what's going to happen. It's like virtual reality, except without the virtual part. It's like a room full of people, like when you're in virtual reality, but you're in a room full of people. Oh, goodness. Let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stink, but please don't go.
welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, segment three, no fish yet. That is a testament to how slow this shop is on Friday afternoons. Not a single human being has come over to the window and said hi. Sarah, the quitter, Stacy, walked by, but she walked by with the people she's in a meeting with. So we're not going to get Sarah looks like. Maybe the last segment. I think the last segment's going to be the only possible segment with a little impromptu guest. You might be stuck with me today. I'm making good time here, so maybe I should lollygag a little more. But, well, we got to be done in this room because this is where the reading discussion is going to happen. So I have to get this thing done and get out of the way. So, I mean, I'm going to be in this room, but I can't be recording a show while we're trying to have a discussion. Maybe I can talk them into turning the discussion into a show. That would be really fun, actually. We just pass one of the mics around. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's going to come. There's going to become a backlash. We're talking about virtual reality and about the all this layer of technology between us and our experience of the real. This creation of community that is non-location based community that we carry over, this bubble of virtual community that we carry around with us that keeps us from being present to the people around us. So I was telling you about a conversation Chris Stefanik and I had this morning. And so I think there's going to be a wholesale embrace on one side, but I think there's going to be a backlash, right? I think there's going to be a backlash where people are going to take all this technology even farther, and they're going to start craving actual reality. So as I was saying before, picture the commercial, as I was saying before the break, you know, the new thing in virtual reality. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like a commercial picture. It's like virtual reality, except it's not virtual. That's right. It's like being in a room full of people, but you're in a room and there are people. Da-da-da. That's right. Coming soon in the beta test of this new conversation in a room over coffee version one, you know. So how do I do this? Well, we have this room and there's people in it and there's coffee, and you come drink coffee in the actual room with people. So what's the interface like? Oh, it's ocular. Okay, cool. So it's like literally ocular. Like you use your eyes. Oh, so like we have these screens and there's like a projection from each of us no, you're actually looking across the table and seeing the person directly. Oh, what's the audio interface like that? And it is the most seamless audio interface ever devised. Really? Yeah. So it's like we've completely stripped it down to where you won't even know it's there. It's sound waves directly hitting your eardrum, like through some kind of an earbud that kind of sits inside the ear. No, there's not even an earbud, like an ocular implant. No, this goes around any implants directly to the eardrum. Wait a minute. So I'm looking directly at, okay. So I get it. This is amazing. And now what about, you're talking about this coffee drinking. Is it some kind of like a sensor? Is there like, do I have to, is it going through like a neural interface, like through a helmet, or is there like there's some kind of an apparatus I put on my mouth? You know, well, it's kind of like an apparatus. It's called a cup, and you're going to take this cup and you're going to lift it to your lips, and you're going to put the coffee from the cup into a direct interface with your taste buds. And then there's a secondary olfactory response through the back of your mouth. But this is like cutting edge. I mean, it's like, it feels so real. I mean, I know I felt some pretty real. I know, but are you ready? It feels real because it is real. Wait a minute. So you're telling me that through this thing you've invented, drinking coffee in a room with people, that I can be directly experiencing reality. Absolutely. Man, I'm telling you, it's going to be like crack. It's going to just be like crack. The experience of the real is going to be like crack. It's going to be, it's going to be amazing. People are just going to be like addicted to it. They're going to be like going to ice cream socials. People are going to be worried about their kids. It's going to be like, you know, I'm so worried. My son, Jimmy, he's all into this new experience of reality thing. Last week, I came home and I caught him mowing the lawn. He was right out there on the mower. It wasn't even the riding mower. He was walking and there was grass all over his white tennis shoes. And the backyard smelled like cut grass because he was cutting the lawn in the sun himself. And he was smiling the whole time. I was like, oh my gosh. See, that's what's going to happen. It's going to all flip. All of our parents' generation that grew up with this big filter, they're going to have these little kids. They're going to grow up and they're going to be like, hey, I'm going to play the fiddle and have a conversation. We're going to write a song together. And they're going to be like, no. Are you guys going to build a website about it? Are you going to make a are you going to start a t-shirt brand and sell it online? No, we're just going to play some music. Is it going to be like live streamed? No. So who's going to hear it? The people in the room. Only the people in the room. I'm having fun with this today. This is a good time. Hey, Mark Gieschek. I'm going to try to get Mark on the show. Come on. Come on, Mark. I told my listeners that Mark Gieschek was right on the other side of the bookshelf, and we're fishing. I told them I set up the mic for interviews, and it's like fishing. So I'm trying to get people that walk by to come in and say hi. So,
well, consider me to be one who slipped off of the hook.
Come on, at least say that in the microphone. Come on, yeah. Mark Gieschek from the Over the Counter Podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Andrew.
You're slipping off the hook?
I'm slipping off the hook right now. Goodbye.
So you were just refilling your cup or something. I thought your meeting was over. Your tease, you know. All right, so that was close. Okay, we got a bite. Oh my gosh, we got a bite. Here's a guy I don't know. There's a guy that you would know that out of this reading group, the one guy that I don't know is the one that has come early. So he's looking at me like the lights are on, no one's home. I think this is the guy that is the founder of like the Catholic Urban Farming Coalition or something like that. All right, so this is like radio without a net, you know, trying to do something fun. Anyway, okay, so this is what happens when you give yourself over to the possibility of reality. It sometimes gets messy. It sometimes doesn't happen. But sometimes genius and amazing wonderfulness happens, you know? All right. So moving on. Oh, one last thing. So I can't tell you much, but I personally, myself, me, I am working on an app. That's right. As if I didn't have enough to do. I am working on an app that will be an interface that will use the ubiquity of the technology that normally distracts us and disconnects us from reality and from the people around us to actually connect us to the people around us. Are you intrigued? All right. And I got a cool brand name for it too. So I found out a great idea. You'll hear more if I go forward with this. But I got two or three friends of mine and I are working on this, and we were having this conversation and I started pitching an app just I came up with on the moment, and it turns out that I have friends who do apps and they're interested. So you never know, you may get a startup chronicled on this, kind of like the startup podcast. All right, so we're getting towards the end of the segment, and so what I want to talk about next, I'm going to go ahead and get started. And we'll see how far we get into it. We might get interrupted by the group trying to come in, but I'll just make some people talk to me if some people come into the group. There was an article that I'm going to try to link they found over in Greece, they found a warrior's tomb. near the palace of Nestor. Nestor was one of the kings that you see mentioned in Homer. And they found his palace, and they were trying to dig closer to it. They ended up going to this olive grove and digging around because they couldn't get the permits to dig where they wanted to. And they have unearthed a warrior's tomb that is literally redefining our view of early Greek civilization, how classical Greek civilization came about, what happened before what they call the Greek Dark Ages. And we're talking about literally the foundations of Western civilization. We're talking about the beginning of something like a cooperation between city-states in Europe and the connection between them, and even democracy, the beginning of democracy itself as a concept has been altered by what they found in this warrior's tomb. And so it's pretty fascinating. It's like I'm going to try to recount in very layman's terms, because I am a layman on this, especially on this stuff. But, and I wanted to say, I just want to talk about this briefly. And then where I want to talk about what that tells us about history a little bit. Just, I want to talk about the nature of history, the craft of history, the genius of history, and kind of like what it can show us. And just kind of go that direction a little bit. We may get interrupted and if we do, then I will pick this up on the next episode, and I'll just dive back into it. All right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley, and we'll be right back.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so far, I'm going to say our fishing expedition has been an absolute failure. So far. I mean, we did get a little bite from Mark, but Mark was off to give someone a tour of the building, looks like. So, or to go further on to their conversation. So I couldn't snag him. But it was a nibble. I mean, we had him on the hook for a second, but he slipped off. Sarah's meeting is going longer. So one guy showed up for the reading group, but he's one guy in the group I don't know. So, all right. So we're going to see what happens. If any interesting off-the-cuff conversation happens on this show today, it will be on this segment. Well, partially just because of logic, because the rest of them are done. But also, this is the room where the reading group's happening and people are showing up. So I'm kind of rooting for like an Adam Beach to show up. Zach Candler should be here any minute. You know, someone is going to get here. So, all right. So we're talking about the Minoans and the Mycenaeans. And so basically this article was basically saying, look, you have the Minoan civilization on Crete, and then on the mainland, you have the Mycenaean civilization. And this Minoan civilization on Crete was like really, really advanced and really kind of like together. And they kind of thought that the Minoans were like the more advanced. And then the people on the mainland were kind of like living in dirt huts and stuff. And they were kind of like not nearly as advanced as these other people. And the I think it's the Minoan civilization kind of burned down or something and kind of went away. And they were trying to figure out what happened, but they thought that what happened is these people took over the mainland and kind of like, you know, some different stuff happened there. And it was like maybe kind of a cataclysmic kind of like, you know, takeover kind of a thing, or like they were wiped out and replaced or something. But then they dig this warrior up and they can look at by the way the writing is and by the religious imagery and the objects and stuff. And he's a Mycenaean warrior that is the culture that is represented by the stuff that they buried, and it's a treasure trove. It's a ton of stuff they put in with this warrior. Reflect a culture that has kind of shared and adopted some Minoan stuff. So it looks like way back before what they call the Greek Dark Ages, back in 1600 BC, 1600 to 1800 BC, back then in this, when the Minoans and Mycenaeans were around, it looks like that there was a fairly flourishing Mycenaean culture that had been deeply influenced by the Minoans in a way that shows all the signs of like a kind of like Rome and Greece kind of acknowledging each other's gods, but calling them different things or something, you know, kind of a shared kind of like letting their writing and their religion kind of intersperse on, you know, it's kind of like interpenetrate and kind of influence each other a little bit. And that's just something we didn't think happened. And this is, we're talking about at the early stages, we're talking 1600 to 1800 BC. So this is the stuff that was going to end up becoming the people that were the stories that they were talking about in Homer. So this is buried so far in antiquity that until a year, 100 or 200 years ago, they thought Troy and a lot of these places mentioned in Homer were mythical, and then they found them. So this is stuff so shrouded in antiquity, so deeply shrouded in antiquity, that we thought that some of it was fake. We thought that some of it was mythical, you know? That's pretty cool. So that just kind of got me thinking about history and the craft of history and doing history and kind of what it can tell us, you know? And, you know, we work really hard to kind of get an understanding of something really simple like that, of like just how two civilizations, one on an island, one on the mainland, how they interacted and everything. And just the finding of a few pieces of artifacts with some religious references change our view of how Western civilization started and when it started. So now here's, I want to talk about the craft of history and humility a little bit, because any peasant in any farmer's market, you know, any market in either of those civilizations is a genius compared to all of the archaeologists and anthropologists on Earth today about that topic, because he just knows those common little things, you know. So the average Jew just buying some fish in the early church, you know, Jesus died 20 years ago, rose from the grave. You know, just kind of, he's, you know, just a normal Christian dude to just buying some fish, you know, doing his thing. He knows more about that world than all the biblical scholars put together, probably. He knows all about the little details about, oh yeah, that thing happened over in Corinth. I heard about that. And that guy came through here one time. Yeah. But I heard that. I heard Paul like wrote a letter and kind of smacked him down a little bit. It's a, yeah. I mean, they're at it. They experienced it. So here's Zach the space plumber. It has entered the building. I'm fishing for impromptu guests. Ladies and gentlemen, Zach the space plumber has entered the room.
Is this mic on?
That mic is on. And it's
all
your,
right.
It's your microphone.
Hello, America.
I was like, hey, I'm recording right before this reading group. And I'm in the cafe, so I'm hoping to, I'm like, we're fishing. I'm going to put this microphone out like bait. And then the one dude that shows up before you is the one guy in the group I don't know.
Oh, Malcolm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, what's going on, Zach?
I was just reading some Wendell Berry downstairs, getting ready for this group.
I was just not reading Wendell Berry and doing my show. So Jared canceled on me. Jared was supposed to be my guest today, and he got held up downtown. So
gotcha.
So I did an impromptu show, which has been pretty good so far. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to set the gear up as if I have a guest, and hopefully I can get a guest. So that dude there came, and I had no idea who he was, but he was looking in here like, why are you in my room? And I'm like, I must be like the Catholic urban farming guy, because I don't know him.
So, yeah, that's Malcolm. He's the Catholic urban farming guy.
Yeah, nice.
You'll get to meet him soon enough.
Yeah, for sure. So how are things going in the space plumbing business? Have you made any, have you built any interesting space crappers lately? Or?
Oh gosh. I have actually had some work in the plumbing business, space plumbing business lately.
Really? So I was just joking.
Well, yeah, no, it's funny because I don't mostly work on this, but I just had a guy emailing me the other day about failures for the urine removal device on the spacecraft. So there you go.
You literally are a space plumber now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm helping him look at what are the consequences of failures of the urine containment system.
I am a prophet. I jokingly dubbed you a space plumber, and now you are, in fact, a space
plumber. Well, I never denied that there's plumbing involved.
It's like Beavis and Butthead.
It's just...
I have the power supreme. I totally made it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that it was under your purview. So Zach does, safety and...
Reliability.
Reliability. Mm-hmm. Basically, all the stuff that keeps the human beings inside the tube or whatever it is. Not a tube, something, the ring, whoever. Yeah.
And these days, I'm particularly working with the environmental control and life support system.
And this is
which does involve the waste management system.
And this is what they call it, Orion, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing that's going to Mars, right?
Yes.
So
eventually, hopefully.
Eventually. So there's been... I just thought that there's interesting stuff. I guess like somebody got a contract down in your world or down in Littleton someplace about the new these probes that are going to go out and look at all these moving objects, asteroids, comets, and whatnot, or something. There was a big guy. It was all over NPR.
I have no idea.
Yeah, the guy from
I'm not on the up and up with the NPR these days, I guess.
Okay, so I won't be soon because I found an auxiliary plug in my new car so I can actually get on my phone and listen to podcasts and whatnot. Yes. All right. The fish are jumping in the boat now. The fish are jumping in the boat now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Adam Beach.
Adam Beach, give him the mic.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Adam?
What's up?
Have you been almost shot by any famous Southern Catholic writers recently?
The rumors are that I may have been.
So, if you listen to the show, you'll recognize, in addition to Zach the space plumber, you'll recognize Adam Beach is the guy who, on his way back from college, almost got shot by Wendell Berry, which, by coincidence, we are doing a talk.
Which is one of my greatest achievements in life.
Right, right.
And I almost stole his tobacco.
Almost stole his tobacco,
which
too.
Which might have been why he almost shot
me. See, Jared Stout was supposed to be on the show today, and he wasn't on the show. So I set up, and I've been doing this show by myself, but I set it up where I could have some guests if they showed up. There you go. And so I told my listeners that we're fishing. It's like fishing.
There you go.
But it's like the kind of fishing. It's catfishing. Where you just basically throw it down deep and then just drink.
Who's the greater prize? Zach Candler or Adam Beach?
I don't know. The second fish is usually the better one, right?
He's the sleeper, Malcolm.
And then this is the guy. Malcolm, is that your name? So Malcolm came, and I don't know. He's the one guy in this group I don't know. I'm assuming you're the Catholic urban farming guy?
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't feel comfortable dragging him onto the show. I thought he might be freaked out. It's like, who's this fat dude with some microphones trying to... See, I wish this would have happened earlier. We should just do a whole show. Maybe we should record this whole discussion or something. So you have like 30 seconds. How you been, Adam?
I've been well. Yeah, reading Wendell Berry today in preparation for our meeting.
Yeah.
And I have some poetry to share.
Poetry? What are you, a liberal or something? Poetry?
There's nothing liberal about poetry.
Well, liberal in the classic sense of the word, right? In the real sense of the word, liberal. All right, good. So when are we going to drink some wine?
Do you have any here?
No. Well, yeah, maybe. Then maybe tonight.
I depend upon you, Wade.
All right, we got to get together for some dinner. All right, well, alas, the fish came at the last minute. We are out of time. So we're going to pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out. Thanks, guys.
I'll take your place, marble stone. I'll take your place, marble stone.